Yes.
This meeting is now being recorded.
All right. Good morning, everybody. For those of you on the phone, this is David Rubin. I'm a judge in San Diego County, and I'm chair of the Judicial Branch Budget Committee. And I wanted to welcome everybody to the meeting. If you're listening in, if you could mute your phone from your end so we don't get feedback, that would be really helpful. And today is the first of what will be several meetings where we start to help form up for the Judicial Council to take a look at the 1920 budget. As you all know, the 1920 BCPs, or budget change proposals, are due to the governor's office in September, giving us a scant 5.5 months to get those submitted to him or her, depending on who. Well, it'll be him still in September. And then, but the council has to vote on them at their first meeting before September, which is July, which in effect cuts us down to 90 days. So we'll be having several meetings on developing the BCPs, and the initial stage of that are the initial funding requests. So this will be the first of probably a couple of meetings. So welcome. And let me, before we start, let's go ahead and take roll.
Judge Rubin.
Here.
Justice Hume.
Here.
Judge Sanderson.
Here.
Judge Brody.
Here.
Judge Lucas.
Here.
Judge Nagler.
Here.
Ms. Flanner.
Here.
Ms. Ibarra.
Here.
Mr. Roddy.
Here. Did you send to Michelle?
Yes.
So, first of all, the meeting is open to the public and is being recorded. That means members of the public can join the call via a listen-only code, permitting them to join and leave at any time without notice. For those of you who are speaking, please identify yourselves before you begin for the benefit of all participating and listening to the meeting over the phone. Again, let me ask members on the phone or members of the public on the phone, please place your phones on mute so that and don't place us on hold so we hear your hold music. Just put us on mute. For this meeting, no public written comment has been received. And is there anyone present, Ms. Fogarty, who would like to speak?
No.
All right, from the public. All right. So let's, with that, what I thought we would do today, and I see this as kind of a multi-meeting approach, is I wanted to hear, what we've got set up is this. I want to hear generally from Zlatko and Lucy about their thoughts about, as we form up 1920 and, you know, transitioning to a new administration, kind of what their thoughts are about that in a very general sense. And about 10:30-ish, no, 11, yeah, about 10:30-ish, we have Judge Conklin will be able to join us to talk a little bit about some of TICBAC's thoughts about what they want to see. And about 11:30, we have Tech joining us through Justice Marcia Slough and Mr. Robert O'Young to talk a little bit about some of the Tech proposals. As you know, they had the largest single group of proposals came out of Tech, so we kind of wanted to hear from them a little bit more to flesh out kind of what their thoughts are in terms of priorities. So that's kind of what we have set up, and then we'll just see how much we get done today. So with that, any questions before we start? All right. On the phone, any questions before we start, Judge Anderson?
None. Thank you.
And Ms. Hunter?
None.
All right. All right. Let me turn it over to Zlatko and Lucy.
All right. Well, thank you all. I think the issues you've raised as far as our strategy are very important, in so much as we do have a new governor coming in, and therefore we do not know exactly, we don't know who that will be and what their objectives and interests and ideas are for the branch. So I think when we're framing what we are presenting to a new administration, it is to a new audience who may have a different level of awareness and understanding of our issues. Yes.
On the phone, can you hear Zlatko okay?
Barely.
Barely, that's what I thought. We need another, let me move a microphone.
Hold on a second, I'll get it. Let me take my microphone.
All right.
Let's try it again. This time with feeling.
Take two. Is this any better for those folks on the phone?
Much.
Yes, great. Thank you.
Okay. So we won't have the years of developed knowledge of our base issues, our policy issues, and the fact that the branch has moved, over the last, two terms of this administration to a very different place than it was when it started. The budget reductions, the reinvestments, the innovations. There's a lot that this new administration is going to need to learn from us. And so the typical process has been, I say typical because there are variations within this theme, is how does the new administration learn about budget policy sort of beyond what they would have learned from, casual interactions with branch leadership or their awareness of what's going on in the news or other interested parties coming to them. Obviously, there are folks now vetting and providing to these candidates their endorsements, and so they might be hearing, their views on what's happening in different parts of the budget and, the state at large. So one of the biggest keys to sort of schooling up a new administration is the work that the Department of Finance does. In my years there, we prepared voluminous binders of information that provided historical budget information. We identified key issues that were both sort of historical and looking forward. And in many ways, the Department of Finance staff provide the first sort of bureaucratic view of what is happening in state government for this new administration to evaluate. They'll also be looking, they'll have a process in which budget change proposals that would have come from state entities through the September submittal will then filter to them, and they'll be looking in the lens of the new administration, their own priorities, the lens of what it is that the Department of Finance is recommending in terms of issues. They tend to focus on splitting them up into two worlds. Baseline, these are the kinds of things that you need to fund for this particular area, regardless of your policy, because the cost of doing business. So trust us in understanding that these are the things that should be part of your budget, regardless of where you lean one way or the other in terms of the policy area. And then there are things that are put in that other bucket of policy issues. And I think that those are important because then they start to frame beginnings of what that new administration understands to be our priorities. And that very first level of understanding doesn't necessarily result in things being in the budget from the onset, meaning in January when the budget's released. Because then they have to then see if they've, built a budget that, it seems is balanced, but it's based on, the baseline adjustments. They may have other issues in terms of budget solvency that they need to figure out before they go and spend money, or where they may actually have some initial priorities, some campaign type, issues that they'd like to address from the onset, but those tend to be limited, and then as they go through the spring process, get a better understanding of where, where revenues are, and sort of solidifying their policy position and seeing how it aligns or doesn't with the items that have been brought forward by the different budgeting entities. Then they tend to make those more bold statements as we get into the spring and ultimately maybe even in the May revision with the legislature. So I think it's a different opportunity than what we've had in the past because the filter is different than it used to be. The Department of Finance staff are still there, but their approach into what they're bringing to a new administration is different because they don't have that body of work. They don't necessarily have that same relationship. And depending, again, who is, say, the Department of Finance director and his or her their executive team, I think the Governor Brown benefited from the same team effectively moved on with Ana Mata Santos, and therefore she had had some ideas and awareness and some credibility with the administration. And so they were able to move a little bit more forcefully in their first budget and doing some things that were pretty pretty strong to balance the budget, you know, very large negative budget that Governor Brown had to deal with. And that's sort of what foundationally does not want to do to a new governor is handing off a massive deficit, but rather, as you've seen, building actually a reserve to hand off to a governor who's better able to withstand sort of, you know, the economic ups and downs that are likely to come in that term. So, and I think sort of in stage setting as to where we're at, we have a lot of worthy and, you know, items to be considered, but in the grand sort of discussion of where our branch strategies and opportunities are, where the chief is wanting to take the branch, you know, there's a number of still outstanding transformative ideas out there, you know, that are, you know, embodied in the Futures Commission as an example, and some of the items that the chief talked about in her State of the Judiciary. So I think we have to frame sort of this next step, you know, likely differently than if it were with the same administration and sort of their base of knowledge that's been developed over the last 8 years. You know, that is, I think, an important consideration for this group. And again, these are important, and folks have put time into them, but I think we need to consider them in the context of this transition and how they'll be received and what message do we want to send and carry forward to the next administration as they're getting their really their kind of initial view of what it is that this branch wants to do. And sometimes I think that does change the way in which we approach it compared to what have been historical approaches on submitted budget change proposals to the administration, the new administration in this instance.
How consistent do you see the staff being across the new administration to the previous one?
Yeah, and I think an example here is that there was a unique opportunity where the same folks basically carried over in many respects at the decision-making level at the Department of Finance, but that's not been the case at all. In fact, Schwarzenegger brought in someone who was out of state, Donna Ardoin, who was a respected economist, had been a director in Florida, but did not know California. And so that presented quite a challenge for us at the Department of Finance, explaining what California's limitations are. And so there was quite a bit of transition going on there. So it can vary. I think there was at least we benefited from the continuity of the last, but you can't say that. In fact, I give you sort of the extreme opposite, which is there was someone out of state who didn't and came from the East Coast, didn't understand California's environment with labor, environment with budgeting, the dynamic with the legislature and that context. So it can vary quite a bit. So I think we be mindful of where we're at and what kind of message and how complex we think the message can be to a new administration for dealing with our issues.
I do think that at the executive level, yes. So the governor's cabinet will all be changed out, so new players there. At the director level, there will be new folks as well. So director of finance, as Rocco is saying, it will be a different individual. But below that, at the staff level, I think you'll find a lot of the same individuals will be in place. So the program budget manager at finance, for example, very powerful position, they will remain intact. And they will be the ones that will brief the incoming executive team on current condition and to help identify the priorities of the new administration.
Yeah, and yes, we've spent hours and hours while doing our normal work preparing those volumes of transition binders, again, looking into historical budget information, and there's this sort of the permanent bureaucracy of the Department of Finance that works with the new administration and their transition team on what it is that they're looking for. So there will be familiarity at that level as far as the staff and all the work that we've done in educating them, but when they bring it to the decision makers, the new administration, there'll be new faces and new minds. They could have come from state government, so they may have familiarity, if they're pulling from the existing crop of fiscal leaders that may be in the legislature or prior leaders, you know, sometimes they'll pull folks who have been retired or consultants or whatever the case may be, so there might be that familiarity. But again, I'd say it can range from the same director of finance moving over to someone from out of state at the highest levels, but that is that base level of funding, base level of staff should be presenting the issues as they've been seeing them from us for the last couple of years.
Question related to yours? So,
Judge Brody.
So with that understanding, I just have not paid attention to this previously, but will the new governor have a new director of finance, like, from day one?
I mean, typically, the first appointment made is the director of finance. You'll have the chief of staff in the governor's office, and then very quickly after that, finance.
Yeah, and I mean, understand that they're sworn in on January 1, and by January 10, their name is on a budget.
Well, so this is yet another related question, I suppose. That new director, I mean, it's a lot for anyone to wrap their arms around, you know, 10 months, much less 10 days. So,
trust me, so the transition, there will be, you know, as they're heading into the election, there will be their team that will advise them, assuming, you know, I'm sure all sides are anticipating victory. And so there is a group that is working. And so even though they aren't sworn in until January 1st, no, there is a tremendous amount of work that's happening the day after the election.
Well,
November, I mean, yeah, Justice Shims can speak specifically about his experience on this.
Well, what I think is that running for governor is a very big undertaking in California, and that Governor Brown was the most expensive gubernatorial race in the history of America, and it was a big deal. So what I think is that not a whole lot of time can be spent in getting ready to govern when you're just getting to be elected so that you can govern.
Right.
And that means that usually the day after the election, the candidates are exhausted. They've completely gone through, you know, the mill, and yet they have 2 months to get ready for a budget announcement. And they are bringing in, trying to figure out their cabinet, trying to figure out the director of finance. They're trying to get all this together. This is all happening in weeks. And the point of all this is that, to me at least, is that the people in the Department of Finance, not at the upper level, but the people who are actually working in the Department of Finance program, managers and such, they have a tremendous, tremendous amount of power during that
right.
stage, because neither the governor nor the higher-ups that he's going to appoint into the cabinet are going to have much knowledge about fiscal operations in California. So in this two-month period that everything is trying to happen, you're trying to put a government together, and you're trying to get ready for a budget announcement on January 1st, you necessarily have to rely on the people, and the cabinet members have to rely on the people who actually know what they're talking about. So that's just the truth of the matter, I think, and I think that tells me that the better our condition is with the staff at the Department of Finance in terms of our fiscal situation, the better off we are going to be when we go into this new administration.
John, sure.
I just want to thank John for not being heard.
We only have two microphones. Well,
okay.
Did you want to move up next to...
Thanks, John.
All right. Great. Ms. Fogarty, did you want to share anything about this? All right. Any more? Let me go to the phone. Judge Anderson, do you have any questions for Mr. Wardlaw, Mr. Theodorovic?
None.
About what we just talked about?
None.
Hello?
Did you hear? None. She said
none.
None.
Okay. Ms. Plenner?
None.
All right. Can we turn up the polycon? All right. Great. Okay. That takes us to 10:30.
I did tell Judge Conklin we would bring him on board. Okay. All right. Well, great. So, let's talk a little bit about the additional funding request situation. We received, it looks like 28. They're color coded. Hang on a second. Yeah, why don't we have that? Ms. Guzman, why don't you tell us a little bit about how they were organized? Hello?
Yeah.
Judge Conklin, is that you?
About the green, are these, were these budget change proposals that we included that they approved then in some form?
So three of them, yes, were budget change. IFR number 27, which is support for developer operations, there is an amount in the governor's budget,
right.
Kind of two separate amounts, $47.8 million and $75 million. And it's,
oh, I see.
So that's a similar request.
I see. Just with a new amount.
Yes.
Similar to number six, which was a lesser amount.
Yes.
Than in the original proposal, which was just a $4 million one-time pending a review of an outcome of the video remote interpreting pilot.
Yes.
There were some differences definitely between them. This, even this proposal, which was submitted last year, and what was also in the government budget.
But that's all to be expected, right? I mean, that's that BCP would get.
Well, it's hopeful that they're approved as requested, but in this case, it was modified.
I guess what I mean is it's not unusual for them to be
correct.
Modified
correct.
Before their final budget.
Absolutely.
That's all I meant.
And I did want to mention one more thing. IFR number 18, which is the self-help funding IFR. For this
Hi, I hope I'm not interrupting. It's John Conklin calling in.
We're not interrupting, Judge Conklin. Hang tight.
Okay. So for IFR number 18, the current request is $23.7 million. There is an amount of $19.1 million in the governor's budget for self-help pending going out to the trial court. This IFR also includes $1.7 million for a self-help center that was actually something that was recommended in the in the Chief Justice's Futures Commission. Sorry, in the Futures Commission report.
So, what I wanted—I know Judge Conklin is actually in the middle of something right now. I thought we would kind of transition to Judge Conklin, kind of get his perspective from the TICFAC perch, if you will, and let him get back to what he was doing. And this is my invitation, so we could at least hear from him, kind of just in a general way about. His thoughts. Go ahead, Judge Conklin.
Thanks. I really appreciate that. I'm in Sacramento at the death penalty court, so I appreciate you making room for me now. You know, essentially what we're doing is doing our best to defer to further movement on the governor's budget as to be careful not to derail that. We have a list of BCPs that have come before the TICFAC membership. They haven't prioritized those yet because we had our earlier meeting in which we came up with a list. We have another meeting, I believe Lucy would know, I think it's April or May, in which we will make an attempt to prioritize those BCP requests. So that's, I'm not sure if that is particularly helpful to you, except that that's how we're trying to approach them at this time in deference to the proposed budget.
Okay, thank you. you. Let me. Any questions for Judge Conklin in the room? All right, Judge Anderson, any questions for Judge Conklin?
None, thank you.
Ms. Pointer, any questions for Judge Conklin?
No, thank you.
All right, perfect. And then, Judge Conklin, there's room on your schedule to look at IFRs / BTPs that you did not submit, but that we think will have, that TICBAC needs to look at, correct?
Exactly. So we're looking to you, both forward and backwards, so to speak, in the sense that if you have input back to us that you'd like us to consider, we're trying to remain pretty fluid and flexible as those come back. So if there's anything that you would like us to take a look at as far as the BCPs, that's kind of why we're taking the approach we're taking right now, so we can spin, so to speak, on the dime if we need to.
Okay, perfect. All right. Any questions based on – I feel like I'm in court. Any questions based on that? All right. Thank you, Judge Conklin. Learn something.
I'll get back to the death penalty. Thanks very much.
All right.
Bye-bye.
All right. Great.
I have a question on the chart.
Yes, go ahead.
What does the position number refer to? So, like, one of the columns is position number, and some of them have a number.
Employees.
Yeah, so that's the number of full-time employees or full-time equivalents that are requested in each funding request.
I thought I was referring to a prior, our priority from last year. Okay, perfect. Thank you.
On the, I have a question also, Ms. Good, this is Judge Rubin, on the chart. You know, the second to the last column, committees.
Yes.
Are these committees that have already looked at this, or are these committees that will have to look at it?
These are committees that we are recommending to look at it.
Okay. All right.
Some of these committees have looked at the request or proposed the initial funding request, but these are all the identified committees that have some kind of investment in this initial funding request.
Can I ask a stupid question?
Sure.
Did all of these come to don't look at me like that, Brody. Don't have to come over there. So because all of these come to JBBC, do we really need to put JBBC in the committee?
We probably don't. I actually considered taking it out, so I will do that.
It was just a thought. I mean, you do what is best for you.
Okay.
All right, Justice James.
I have a question, and that is just in terms of the process while we're waiting to see what happens with this year's budget. So I'm not – yeah, I understand what Judge Conklin said about TICBAC kind of waiting to prioritize these things. And I assume we're kind of waiting to prioritize it too. And I'm just wondering how we go forward when we don't know whether – I mean, it's going to make a big difference if we get
– right.
That is protected for the transport operations.
I kind of have the same question, only because while I think there's a certain level of confidence about the budget – I mean, we all watched the stock market 2 days ago, and since, I mean, I don't know how much more, but who knows what's in the next 90 days. But how do we do this?
My suggestion would be that you have essentially two tracks. One that assumes that the governor's budget stays intact. And if that's the case, then my recommendation is that this gets significantly pared down. And then a separate track that is based on not having this governor's budget go forward, and then what you propose to be moving forward to the new administration.
All right, so I have a couple of different versions of this.
And obviously the ones that have been submitted in the past that have not been included in the budgets, the relative work over the next 90 days is different.
Right.
Because they've been through that process, but there are still a substantial number that are new. And so I think that we do have to think carefully about some of the directions. And I think, again, as we've talked about, what is the next strategic submittal and how any of these new ones, because they would be quite a bit of work to work through these and get them into a position. Yes.
And I think...
This is Mike Bright.
The BCP-related issues that have gone straight to TICBAC aren't on this list at all.
they haven't been prioritized by TICFAC?
No, they are, but they haven't been prioritized.
It is grouped by the entity that submitted them.
Okay.
The other
I haven't seen that list, so I didn't know.
Well, the other obvious point I think that everyone knows about, but I'll just say it anyway, and that is that, you know, these proposals vary in terms of how much money is being sought greatly. And so if something happens with our current budget, you know, if we get $125 million, that's going to, you know, we might not want to worry about the $200,000 question we have. Whereas if we don't get that $125 million, we may want to pursue only that proposal or very few proposals with that.
I don't know if this is the time to ask the question, but so you were saying that we have a new administration coming in and that the budget change proposals we would submit need to be, in some sense, I mean, they serve a dual purpose, right? Yes, there's the fiscal piece, there's the budget piece, but also as a statement of what our values are as a branch, what we matter, how we intend to provide access to justice for various underserved communities. So with that in mind, if we have a budget change proposal that has been submitted multiple times and we've been told no, if we're dealing with the new administration, in your experience, does that change our decision to submit it time number six? Like, oh, well, we'd like this. We know let's suppose we got $125 million. How do those factors figure into the calculus from your perspective?
Well, as John said, and you know, the director and the sort of executive level will be new, but the staff will be there, and so we have to consider the reasons for rejection and what it is that they may recommend for a sixth time as to why it wasn't. So it's not that, you know, just because it's new to them that the recommendations might change from the staff perspective. Maybe it's heard differently, but I think you started off by discussing what is our strategy and do the resubmit, if we were to resubmit, do they represent what it is that we really want to submit, even if it is, you know, year after year? Does it fit within the goal of advancing access to justice in the same way that maybe some newer, more recent ideas? And then also, if you can think about, there might be things that are not on this list that you might want to pursue in light of, you know, like I said, what was discussed on Monday by the chief, or something
right.
Identified there that might be worthy of being raised that's not been raised as a new policy initiative or an affirmation of something that is that goal for the branch.
So Martin and the chief will be having conversations with the incoming administration. So the conversation about the chief's priorities and where the branch is going, that conversation happens kind of on a different track. With respect to your question, Judge Brody, about kind of the repeat items, to the extent that it really depends on how finance has reacted. So if the reaction from finance year after year after year has been consistent and it's no for whatever reason, then it's hard for me to believe that that's going to shift because you have the same players. They're going to be, you know, basically going to the new governor saying what they recommend, yay or nay, on it. And if absent a chief's priority behind it, it usually just gets dumped in the bucket of no's. That's generally what happens.
Okay.
All right, Judge Nadler.
I just have a question. I'm actually confused about what our best purpose is today. I mean, from a strategic standpoint, I mean, we have a lot of unknowns. We don't know about the governor. We don't know who's going to be appointed as the top echelon in budget. We have strategies that would be or would not be that would be appropriate as to whether or not we put some of these forward with the present administration or not. I'm a little confused about what our best purpose would be today, given these uncertainties.
I think we want to get my thought would be that we kind of do a high-level kind of overview, get a little more education about what's going on, just to kind of front-load the process a little bit so we can learn a little bit more about it. I think that my thought also is that, this is Judge Rubin, my thought is also that not only does the financial picture change, but I think the expectations of the public and change about what they want from us. And I think this, the chief has been clear and the public's been clear that they, you know, about fairness and access and putting court users at the center of what we do and our initiatives. And I think the chief spoke pretty forcefully at her State of the Judiciary about people have been frozen out or priced out of the civil justice system. And so I just thought we could kind of gather more information because there's such a wide spectrum of these IFRs that came in and just trying to, you know, start chewing them up a little bit. So that was my thought. And I was likely you had, we're going to say something, I think, in response to what Mr. Wardlaw said.
No, I mean, he said staff's position will likely unchange. And if you think about the implication of what messages carry forward, they come back to the same thing that we deny year over year. That in of itself can have a negative tone being established by the staff. Doing that as well.
Right, and just the customer base is changing so dramatically that their expectations, so some of the BCPs we've been using might have a slightly 78 Lincoln, you know, gas guzzler feel to them, and we need more of a Prius Prime plug-in hybrid type BCP. That's a car analogy. Because we don't do sports analogies in here anymore. All right. So we're still waiting to hear from Tech, because like I said, they're the biggest chunk. I know Justice Slough is going to be calling in, and she had a conference until she's not going to be done by now, but should I reach out?
Sure. I have two more questions.
Go ahead.
So, John, you mentioned that we should maybe do two tracks, right? One if we get everything that's in the current proposed budget, and then one if we don't. But even if we got everything in the proposed budget, some of the things that we asked for last year were reduced, right? And we got it, but it was reduced. And historically, when that happens, when we get a more than 50% of what we asked for, if it looks favorably on us when we say, but we want the rest the next time, or is it kind of like we say, okay, we get it, we're going to move on? Is there a rule there?
No, I wouldn't say there's a rule. The last submittal of BCPs for this governor's budget, we've dropped the most BCPs in any department in this particular unit. Finance, and they were surprised, and not necessarily in a good way. Our reaction to that was, well, you folks haven't been beating this branch, so you should expect that there was a pretty significant ask. They've responded. We have a good budget, and I think that if we drop the same level of request in the next governor's budget, that would probably not be received well.
Sure.
That said, we still have some significant priorities, and I think this group, this body, needs to focus on what are those high-level priorities and focus there. My recommendation is that the kind of lower-hanging fruit, the smaller stuff, I probably wouldn't go after that and prioritize for the more substantive items.
So in your mind, what would be a reasonable?
I think that number-wise, I'd say below 15 proposals going forward, maybe in the neighborhood of 12 that are the real priorities for this body, would feel about right.
And recall last year, in an effort to limited numbers. Sometimes we combined things that when they were and that was more for us. It felt better that we reduced the number. But ultimately, when it was received by the Department of Finance, the requests were seen sort of separate, and then they just didn't get the attention. So in our effort to try and live within a target number, I think it caused some sort of confusion over there. IT, but it has two different, very different components to it. We called it IT. So we have to think about, you know, that approach might not necessarily be, it's like genuinely one issue per VCP to try and address.
So it's just like council reducing the font size on the page.
Right, but we did. What? And painting the margins. Right. Which I hate. All right, Justice Humes, and I know we have somebody here on the security IFR. Maybe we can hear from him. Go ahead, Justice Humes.
Well, I think it's also important for us to, all these points are very good, and I agree with them all. I just think it's also important for us to remember that the point of submitting BCTs is not only to get a favorable response from the Department of Finance, but the point sometimes is to send the right message to our own community of budget communication branch. And if there's something that we desperately need, even if we know we don't have any chance of getting approval for it from finance, I would still say we should not rule that out, because it may be something that's very important, that's very critical, and our people need to know that we care enough about them to be asking for that, even though we don't get approval for it.
There are some critical words, desperate, critical.
Yeah, right.
And I think that's still an important filter.
Yes,
because need is always existing. The critical need, desperate need, and rises to a different level of evaluation. Notwithstanding that those needs are important, there are levels within that.
Judge Nadler, and then that's a great segue to the security IFR, which talks about hardening the courthouses.
From a strategic point of view, we have the legislature has been given us money for our innovation grants. That money has been allocated. We don't have results from that yet, but clearly it's been a goal of the legislature to encourage us to innovate in the branch. Is there something we can do at this stage that would be supportive of that? It seems to me that piggybacking on some of those successes would be well taken by the legislature. Possibly with better results.
Can we do? Well, like I said, if there are things, if you want to put something as a concept in the process so that it's not lost, then that can be something that's done. I mean, it's not very specific, but if it has a goal in terms of evaluating any initial results from the innovations grant that we'd like to pursue, then I think you can put a pin on the list. I mean, like, there's been some issues percolating lately that not relate to this specific security, but other security, and folks are concerned about, you know, what to do with that. Well, we haven't really determined necessarily our strategy, but it's something just that we should discuss and put on the list of things that we might want to sort of further flesh out. And that's the kind of thing.
Mike Brody and then Justice Humes.
You know, that's a great idea. It may be a year premature.
Right.
That may be a, 2021 kind of deal, because I'm not even sure. I know in the case of our programs, we have incredibly preliminary results that probably would have to be tested and validated. And then, of course, you've got to go through all of our internal structures. But I think that's a great idea. And maybe it's something we set in terms of groundwork with the governor coming in to say, you know, here's something we're going to be seriously looking at in terms of following up on innovations.
And you're not precluded from also thinking about multi-year issues, not this year, but next year, and that as well. So that, not to complicate things, but you know, this is less, it's worthy, but not as worthy as something else. And we think that in order to sort of focus, we can limit and then defer. So it still speaks to the need and not being ignored, but rather it's just in the light of our looking. Not that it's not done, but that it goes to the next year, and so we're already sort of pre-thinking about next year's process.
There is one other piece about the next governor's budget
typically the first year of a new administration, that particular Jan 10 budget is what the executive branch calls kind of budget light, because the outgoing administration tries not to tie the hands of the next administration, and yet that Jan 10 budget has to be completed. So they'll do what's absolutely critically necessary, and then they'll the governor, the incoming governor, typically the April 1 governor's update. You have the Jan 10 budget, then you have the April 1 governor's budget update, and then you have the May revise. Those are the three points in which the budget gets built from the governor's perspective. The April 1 tends to be a bit heavier because now that individual has had more time to think about his or her priorities, and then boom, it comes in. So if you don't see things necessarily in the Jan 10 budget, well, it's because the outgoing administration is deferring to the next administration that will be thinking about things. So if our things aren't necessarily in that Jan 10, that's not uncommon in the first year of administration. Just so you know.
It just assumes.
I had a question about the grant money. Wasn't that originally a administration proposal? It did not come from BCP, in other words.
No, it did.
Yes, and then the legislature adjusted it to put it into the three pots and reduce the amount.
Right.
But it came from,
My point is, I don't know what my point is. Just thinking it through, that actually came from the administration. It didn't come from us ourselves. So maybe it behooves us to really reach out to the administration to see what they want and try to accommodate their, go with them with what they want, because that works with the innovative grant.
Speaking of which, so we have somebody here who I think wants to speak to at least one of the IFRs, which is the Harding, the court. I mean, that's not how it's titled, but that's in effect what we're talking about.
Thank you, Mr. Judge Rubin. I'm Ed Elstad. I head up the security operations unit.
I'm sorry, just to pause you, I don't know if people on the phone can hear, given the speaker location.
Show the microphone.
We could.
Thank you.
Need ours right now?
I don't actually need mine. Why don't we give Mr. Alexander's mine?
Well, you're the chair. You should have one.
We'll move up closer.
How about ours?
We need to hear from Judge Brody.
I'm really.
I've been thinking of.
I know. Let me know.
Just mine.
Thank you again. This is Ed Elstad speaking. Supervisor of Security Operations at the Judicial Council. I apologize. I didn't prepare talking points. I actually came to answer any questions if there were any. However, I wouldn't pass up an opportunity to point out the fact that we are lacking funding for security systems, the aging systems in the courthouses. It's been 4 years since we've been able to actively refresh or replace any systems at all. We have a very small amount of funding that we're able to fix things as they break. Unfortunately, we're in a very expensive crossroads technologically. About 80-90% of the systems, the camera and access control systems in courthouses, are analog, particularly cameras. It's kind of like trying to do your work with Windows 98 on an Apple computer or something. It just doesn't work anymore. And when something breaks, the vendors have a very difficult time finding replacement components to repair the systems. For instance, we've got a court that is waiting for a major component that keeps them from being able to look at their system. That component has been shipped to Canada to try to find somebody that can repair it there. And the court is without a camera system until it gets back, and it's been 6 or 8 weeks without a camera system because we don't have any money to upgrade the entire system. We can't just replace a component of an analog system, unfortunately. We've got to go and do a major refresh, and we don't have any funding to do those types of repairs. We've not been successful recently in BCPs, and this particular IFR was developed separately after our Court Security Advisory Committee chair judge spoke to E&P, and it was brought up some very telling that this needs to happen. And I'm not sure if these materials or the IFRs are available to the folks publicly. In that case, I'm not going to talk about the first paragraph of that because it does identify some specific security vulnerabilities that I'd rather not talk about on an open line. But nevertheless, it can be stressed enough that, that this is coming to a critical and desperate category of funding requests. I know that people get tired of hearing the sky is falling, but we're actually getting chunks of sky that, that are falling. And the courthouse is with no proactive means to address them, and even in an emergency situation, it takes weeks to get in and replace something if you haven't done it proactively. So my hope is to get some funding so we can do this.
Do you agree with the assessment of the IFR that I think it was Judge Olmstead gave us at D&T?
It was Judge Olmedo. Yes.
Olmedo, I mean. That this is a very precarious position with respect to security.
Yes. We are.
I have a question for you and one for Slavko. And my memory is.
Historically, there was an amount from the Improvement and Modernization Fund, and that we could, it was reduced out of there, and then look to facility funds to whatever extent that there was. But then we know those are dwindling, and so there's just been this sort of cascade where now it really other ways, other than, say, the redirection that occurred in 15-16, that there is a real solid baseline.
So if the court has a number exactly that just goes on the link, how do they replace that?
The just to be clear, the screening equipment, the metal detectors and the x-ray equipment is from a separate fund, and that is still funded.
Okay.
And we have a replacement cycle for that.
Okay.
Ideally, we could have a similar program for the rest of the security equipment. That's what I envision.
Or so we can replace it.
It's cameras, access control, duress alarms. We have the continuity of operations planning tool that that the courts use for, to develop their emergency planning that can receive trainings when there's funding available.
You know, the local answer to your question from our perspective is we beg, borrow, and steal. Sometimes we can get the sheriff through one of their programs. Sometimes we have to figure out where to find the money because the critical system goes down, like the duress alarm, for example. The entire courthouse is vulnerable if there's an incident. So it's, I've been on a number of security issues with that over the years. And this is one of those cost of ownership issues that the branches never address.
I think it's fair to say there's a huge variation among sheriff's offices in terms of their
some of the sheriffs will take
supportiveness.
They won't do anything. We just happen to have a good relationship and a clear view that, you know, this is a public safety issue, not a court funding issue. But I think Judge Lucas maybe articulated the other side of the coin, which is some sheriff's departments would put a penny into it if they were forced to because they view this as a court funding issue.
Well, it's Judge it seems to be both. Right? I mean, there's definitely that funding piece. But I have a question about security issues. How do we make the case for security funding without, in a public document, then talking about all of the weaknesses we need to fix, right? I mean, there's definitely a... there's going to be information in here which would, and I haven't seen it, but I'm sure it's there. These are incidents that require more funding. So how, as a branch that's committed to being open and transparent in these requests,
we can talk in relatively generic terms regarding the state of the security systems, and we can use examples in generic terms without identifying specific courthouse vulnerabilities or by location.
You sit with the Department of Finance staff, and then you talk about the specifics.
Okay.
In that fashion, without putting them in writing.
Let me do this. Well, any more questions?
I am on the line, but I can hardly hear you guys.
Hello. I'm trying to finesse that.
Yeah.
See if we can arrange things. Arrange tables.
So.
That back here.
Right.
Maybe what we can.
Yeah, Justice Claw, you're the chair of the technology committee. Fix it.
We could have the speaker come to the table.
We need an IFR for a better phone system.
That's much better. Thank you.
Right. Justice Flau, we've been talking a little bit about how we're kind of in a weird, that we've heard from Judge Conklin about where we're all trying to kind of, given the nature of the budget hearings that are coming up in just a couple of weeks, we're all sort of in a wait-and-see pattern, so it's a little bit hard to be too specific. And people want to take another run at this when we know a little bit more and hear a little bit more from the hearing. With that, in that spirit, maybe just hearing from you and Mr. O'Young and Mr. Dustman a little bit from like a 30,000 foot level about core technology and your thoughts going forward.
Yeah, and thank you for including us. I know I'm pretty certain Rob is on the phone there, and I think Mark is there with you folks in person.
Here in the flesh.
Yeah, so just to kind of, as it relates to the IFRs that are included in the materials that I think are before your committee today, the technology ones I think are found at page 4 and 5. And I think it outlines like 8 or 9 different projects. And I can tell you from a technology standpoint, and as you all know, in the work that you are doing, you know, the IFRs are an extremely preliminary process. It represents kind of a first step toward identifying what could potentially become the BCP in the future. And so for us at JCPC, we are looking at it at an extremely high level in most cases, not including cost information. It's really kind of looking at, exploring, and gathering more information and gathering feedback from our different stakeholders. And I know Rob's going to talk about our process to you guys here in a moment. Because as you all know, technology moves extremely fast. And if we wait year to year before we start thinking about what we need in the out years, we are constantly playing behind the eight ball. So once we have, so all that to say, the 8 or 9 different IFRs that are included within our documentation that has been presented to you does not represent 8 or 9 BCPs that we think JCTC will be recommending go forward. It is more about gathering more information, prioritizing, maybe deferring some of the initiatives that are important, but the timing's not right, removing some concepts off the table, but again, getting us to a point in time where we can gather more data, write a more fulsome report for purposes of the BCP, and provide continuity in the out years as we ask for technology funding. Specifically as it relates to the 8 or 9 items that are included in your materials, I just really want to emphasize that each and every one of those proposals supports and aligns directly with our strategic plan for technology that Judicial Council approved in 2014. They clearly define our statewide goals to promote primarily a digital court. That's huge for the chief. It is huge for JCTC and I think for all of us. And also to optimize court resources as well as the technology infrastructure. In addition, the IFRs directly support our technology plan, our tactical plan for technology. So they align with our strategic plan and they support our tactical plan. You may have noticed that some of the items included are active tactical plan work streams or work streams that fit within our tactical plan. So once you get to the point where the work streams are completing their evaluative process, reaching conclusions, JCTC approving their projects, as we did last month, and Judicial Council likewise approving their initial initiatives, then there needs to be at some point an evaluative process to determine are we going to move forward with it, and if so, how much will it cost? And again, Rob will speak more directly as it relates to the specific projects in a moment. So we are supporting our strategic plan. We are following our tactical plan. We are supporting the directives that the Chief Justice gave to us that came out of the Futures Commission report. So the IFRs that are in front of you span the work that we do from supporting the important foundational aspects of technology completely across the board for the trial courts, appellate courts, and the Supreme Court as well. That includes case management system modernization. As you know, the past few years we've been trying to assure that trial courts have modernized case management systems, which will only help us further move other initiatives down the road, which includes gathering data, sharing court data appropriately amongst the courts and with our sister branches of government when necessary. So again, I guess my comment to you as an introduction to our requests or to the information that we've provided is to reiterate that we are committed to our branch plan. We are coordinated in our approach. We have a roadmap for progressing and improving technology across the board for the entire branch and for all of the courts. So with that, I guess I would invite Rob, who is the Chief Information Officer, to maybe, you know, that's like 60,000 feet, maybe go 30,000 feet and maybe speak a little bit more directly. Rob, are you available?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yep. Okay, terrific. Great. Well, thank you very much. As Justice Flau mentioned, I'm the Chief Operating Officer for Judicial Council and acting as the Interim Chief Information Officer. And I want to give you a little bit of an overview of the process that we went through to identify these initial funding requests. So as Justice Flau had mentioned, the proposals in front of you are really aligned to our strategic plan and our tactical plan, and we have established from an information technology program perspective a very structured and rigorous planning process for which it is inclusive of the courts as well as looking at the business requirements for members of the public, for our justice partners, and we incorporate that into our planning process for our strategic plan and tactical plan. As part of that planning process, we identify those key initiatives that we think are going to benefit the public as well as improve our court operations. And as a result of that planning, we do identify those areas which will require some funding. And so as we go through this overall very structured, rigorous planning process, we look for the opportunities for the need for funding of these various initiatives. And so that's how we are incorporating the IFR process into this overall business planning activity. So as I mentioned, this is a very inclusive process. And so we have already started to revise our strategic plan. We're looking at updating the tactical plan. And so in December of last year, we started to do outreach to the presiding judges, court executive officers, the appellate courts, Supreme Courts, as well as the CIOs within the community to get their input in terms of what they felt were the most important initiatives from a technology perspective for the branch. And so with that input, we did gather a larger set of potential funding requests for which we have now narrowed down to the 10 that are in front of you, which we will further narrow down, as Justice Slough mentioned, from a more detailed timing perspective to see which one of these we can have the biggest business impact over the next couple of years. And so we do intend to do more investigation, more research, and data gathering for each of these items so that we can further prioritize and identify a subset of these that we will then move forward. These do include initiatives, not only business priorities from the branch community, but also related to the Chief's directives, the Futures Commission's reports, as well as some of the innovation work that is going on. So if you take a look at the funding requests, you'll see that some of them include some investigation, establishing some pilot programs, which will then lead to branch-wide programs. So we've been talking a little bit about productizing court innovations. And so being able to utilize BCP money to start these pilot programs and then be able to utilize resources to then productize those pilots and share the good work and the innovation across all of the courts is a model that we're establishing for the technology program within the branch. As Justice Slough, yes, go ahead.
I'm sorry, keep going. I have a question when you're done.
Okay. Also, as Justice Slough mentioned, many of these initial funding requests are directly tied to tactical plan activities. So, for example, there is a IFR for disaster recovery, which is one of our major tactical plan activities. And so this would be to basically fund the pilot to start looking at the framework and proving out the recommendations that recently came out of that particular work stream. Next generation hosting is another one of the areas. And so you'll see a lot of these initial funding requests tied specifically to the overall roadmap, the strategic plan, and the tactical plan. So as I mentioned, we do intend to continue to do further investigation into each of these initial funding requests to identify the ones where we can get the most benefit from the appropriate timing. And so we do intend to reduce the number of these funding requests. However, we thought that it would be important for you to see these 10 items because these were the top 10 priorities that came from the branch. So this came from the presiding judges, the court executive officers, and the CIOs to give you a feel for what they feel is important within their purview related to technology. We do recognize that we will not have the bandwidth to be able to work on all of these items at the same time, and therefore that's the subsequent work that we'll be doing with the CEOs, the CIOs, presiding judges, to narrow these down to those top few funding requests that we will plan on moving forward. So hopefully that gives you a little bit of context around the planning process. It was a very inclusive process, very tied to the structured planning process that we have now established for technology, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have now.
I have a question. This is Judge Rubin. Mr. Ouyang, is there a way between now and the next time we meet, and I think I'm inclined to have another IFR meeting, just given kind of the flux we're in right now, and we have hearings coming up in the next 2 weeks anyway, to get some of these to-be-determined dollar figures filled in, or at least to give us a scale, like if it's, is it $100,000, is it $10 million, something? Because right now we have a long kind of a column of TBDs. A couple of numbers are filled in. I'm just curious.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, we can give over the next few weeks. The intent is to do more research into the content of these requests, and we can put at least a minimally, we can put a range of estimated costs for this.
Okay, perfect. Justice Hughes.
I have a comment more than really a question, and that is, or a request. And my request is that when you guys submit these written materials, if you could please be a little bit more concrete and specific in what you're describing and what the need is. I'm a Luddite, so I know that the problem is probably mine, but I read some of these requests, and I honestly do not understand what is even being sought or what is trying to be accomplished. And it would help me a great deal if you could work on just trying to use more plainer English instead of computerese and explaining what the situation is. So, for an example, I have here, you know, we want to maintain an enterprise content collaboration platform. Okay, an enterprise content collaboration platform means nothing to me. It probably has a meaning, but I don't know what it is. And in the future, if you can kind of just give a little bit more explanation on what you're talking about for the common person, I would be very much appreciative of that.
Here, I second the motion.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm less Luddite-y, but not much less. And sometimes it felt like a little bit more clarification would be helpful. And maybe, especially on the tech stuff, because I think we all understand that tech, the relationship of tech to access to justice, to flexibility for courts, to protecting public access during periods of down budget years is critical. That maybe starting out, therefore, these very important IFRs with the what we intend to accomplish, colon, and then maybe a two-sentence, and then getting more into it might be real helpful. Might be actually helpful for everybody on all the different categories. Right.
Yep, those are very good suggestions.
Judge Brody.
As Judge Rubin was talking about maybe getting a sense of the range of some of these BCP dollar amounts, and I appreciate that it's going to be the case that when it comes time to submit budget change proposals, some of these IFRs will not be quite ready for that stage.
I'm going to add a comment on that point, if I may, is that we will say this, is that the likelihood of getting a budget change proposal is far greater if submitted in September than it is as a spring BCP. So understand that while, you know, we've, you know, deferred some issues, we're going to really have to think about what we can do to get, if you know, whatever the BCPs may be, done in time for submittal. If we kind of already know now what it is that we're looking at, we should really, really, really work together.
No, I
so those are some critical points.
Is that the same in the budget light years too?
Yeah, the time period for us to get into the hopper is really by September. Those BCPs need to be financed.
Sure, but am I – well, so, Mr. O'Young, let me ask, or Justice Lau, did I read it correctly that of the IFRs that were submitted, it's your view that some of these will, because of other work being done, they won't be ready to submit for a BCP request this year, or did I misunderstand that?
Did you say
no, that's correct.
Some will not be ready. Is that what you said, Judge Brody?
Will not. Correct.
Yes, absolutely, for a multitude of reasons. What is shared with you is the view of all of the branches, as Rob referenced, what the presiding judges believe to be of importance, what the CEOs believe to be of importance, what came to JCTC that we evaluated, and it will be hold and evaluated and developed more fulsome, and could not include all of them.
Okay. So I guess one thing, I don't know if, I mean, I get from my work on JCTC, I have a general sense about where the various IFRs might be in terms of being ready for that more fulsome report and recommendation. I'm wondering if there's a way to sort of have a sense of that timeline included so that people who aren't as involved in the tech piece might get a sense of, you know, what are we looking at? Is this likely to be this year? Is this likely something that is going to have to be deferred either to spring or even to the what would it be, the 2021 request, I guess? I don't know
right.
if there's a way I don't know if there's a way to commit to that. I mean, as you say, and completely correctly, it moves so quickly that often, I mean, really the laborious nature of the budget process makes it very difficult, in my view, to stay on top of the developing technology. But nevertheless, it's the process we have to live with. So I don't know if there's a way to talk about that timeline or if even that is too in flux to really commit to.
No, actually, that was the intention of the next phase of the refinement of these IFRs that we would go through. We would put a magnitude estimate in terms of the BCP amount, and we would also then look at the specific timing and readiness for each of these regarding the priority from a time perspective, with the intent that we recognize we would want to submit as many as we can during the September timeframe. However, in looking at the timelines for particular projects, if they are not going to be ready until the spring, then we would need to delay some of those. But the intent would be to try to get as much of the information and as many of the requests that we would want to commit to in as early as possible. But the next phase of the planning would be to incorporate that time frame as well as a magnitude estimate of the cost.
And I think that this is great information for the committee because I think it helps inform us about how we roll out the IFR process, which is our best hope is a fall BCP, and that to the extent that we can get everything in and ready for fall, that spells success. And the things that probably aren't ready for fall probably are for another day, budget-wise, meaning another budget cycle. But we probably need to be, I take responsibility for that. We, and maybe I can ask Judge Lucas and Ms. Flenner to put me on the April agenda, and we can talk a little bit more about this with the CEOs and the PJs.
He's just angling for another invitation to Sacramento.
Yeah, anytime to go to Sacramento, you know, my favorite. So anyway, yes, we probably should be clear about that.
Yep.
All right, great. Any other questions for Mr. O'Young or Justice Lau? All right. Thank you both for being so helpful. And Mr. Dustman, thank you for coming down and joining us. It was a pleasure, and that gives us a lot of great information to go forward with. Thank you, Justice Lau. Thank you, Mr. O'Young.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Have a good
day.
Thank you. Coming up on lunch. Lunch is here. And there's Mike, but let me ask this. We also have members forum coming up, and I'm wondering if there's any more specific, realizing the flux we're in, I know we have our assembly hearing is on April 9th, and our Senate hearing is on the 19th, so we're right up against it. If we're all in agreement that we're going to meet again anyway, maybe we could shift it to members forum. Get everybody on the clothesline. We have one of the IFRs from Ms. Ibarra. Go ahead.
All right. And this is just a request for more information on the IFRs at our next meeting. Some of them, when I'm reading them, aren't totally clear to me if it's a one-time ask or if it's an ongoing ask. And that to me would make a difference, right? If it's a low amount and it's a one-time ask.
It would make a big difference.
I'm reading through them and trying to look for that, you know, the wording, but I can't. There's just a couple of them.
That's a great, and maybe that's something we can flush out the IFR application for.
Mm-hmm.
Like the box was, you know, ongoing, you know, adjustment to base funding, or is it a one-time ask?
Well, there's sometimes there's both in there. A lot of them are like, we need a one-time chunk ongoing. And then an ongoing.
Right.
But sometimes it says nothing and it's not a staff thing, so then I'm like, we say this is one time?
Right, because as Yvonne was right, because we're being asked to evaluate across a wide variety of subject matters that we are, as Justice Hughes pointed out, like, I'm not super comfortable with computers, but somewhat, and I'm not at all comfortable with, say, security. I'm just not educated about it. So the more we can break these down to things that help us focus, better.
Yeah. Framing that as part of a template helps the authors write it better.
So it's something we can adjust, but just so you know, the reason we did it the way we did is the idea was that your initial stage, your concept element, is something in concept we would support going forward. So we didn't require officers to do the analysis.
And then we can just ask
right, and then the BPP concept that comes back in May is fleshed out with dollars more so. But absolutely, what we're trying to do is stop too much work on the front end. You would say, I don't even want to look at that. It's a stupid idea. So absolutely, we can build it in if you so choose. But it's not like an oversight. It's just,
that's a great point.
Okay.
But it's possible that we could... Is it one time in nature, or is it an ongoing issue?
Right.
So there's some indicator of it.
Right. And that might change our attitude about it. Like, as a one-shot deal, we may be more positive about it than if it's ongoing based budget adjustment.
Can I ask another question?
Yes, of course.
So at various points today, we've heard people say, if there's something that the budget committee wants to be developed but isn't in this list, that request should be made, how would we go about doing that?
I think we would task Zlatko and Ms. Fogarty we would give the list and say, can you reach back to these committees, the appropriate committee, and ask for them to develop an IFR for us?
So part of your decision point, when you approve the IFR, you have to determine which is the lead advisory board. So I think you would do that for the same thing for a concept you have, say, you know, I want feedback or found you to take the lead on that. You have to delegate it to somebody.
Right. Yeah. And I think they would do that.
You think
they would do that.
Right, okay.
There would be, in fact, the security one was, that's an example of something that came up at EMP. We were like, well, let's get on that. And they went back, I think that day, and had the thing written up to us. In a few days, the IFR part. All right, your lunch is here. At this point, we're going to go to members forum.
Can we hang up and maybe dial in after lunch?
Yes. Okay. So let's do this. This is not. So what we'll do is this: give us 15 minutes to grab a bite, 20 minutes, hang up, call back in on the closed line, and then we'll go to members forum. And then, all right, that's it. Let's go ahead and hang up. And then.